The ravaging of Africa has been enriching Europe and North America for more than 500 years.
First, European empires imposed slavery and colonialism on the continent.
After 1945, the United States took over as the dominant neo-colonial power.
Through the Pentagon and the CIA, the U.S. government has fueled 14 wars in Africa with arms transfers and military training.
It is American invasion, but the U.S. role is everything.
The U.S. has used the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund to systematically demolish African economies and health and education sectors.
Par les stratégies de la Banque mondiale, les pauvres seront toujours pauvres, les riches seront toujours riches.
This military and economic war enables the looting of Africa's resources by Western multinational corporations.
Shell is into the politics of Nigeria, you know. One might say we have our independence, but economically, we are still being colonized.
Washington's genocidal imperial strategy has killed more than 26 million Africans, but failed to suppress popular resistance.
We have refused to die. We are living for Africa. No matter what they do, no matter what power they have.
You are listening to The Ravaging of Africa, a four-part documentary series about the destructive impact of U.S. imperialism on the continent. I'm Asad Ismi.
I'm Kristen Schwartz.
Voices and sounds in this series were recorded at the 2007 World Social Forum held in Nairobi, Kenya.
This is Corporate Plunder, the third episode in our series. For the next half hour, we focus on the looting of Africa's abundant resources by multinational corporations. We hear from the oil fields of the Niger Delta, from Kenya's coast, and from the Tax Justice Network. Stay tuned.
A major objective of U.S. imperialism and World Bank IMF policy in Africa is to ensure that Western multinational corporations dominate the continent's economies and are able to loot them and send the proceeds to the West. As heard in the Congo, 85 multinational companies are plundering the enormous mineral wealth of the richest country in Africa. This has been made possible by a civil war arranged by the U.S. As a Congolese official said, we just watch our country's resources drain away with no benefit to the Congolese people.
This is the case for all of Africa. South Africa is the continent's largest gold producer, and most of its gold and diamond wealth is controlled by the UK-based Anglo-American Corporation, which operates in 60 countries. Ghana is Africa's second largest gold producer. Multinationals own most of the country's gold, the main source of its wealth, from which Ghanaians get little benefit. Foreign mining companies can repatriate up to 95% of their profits into external accounts and pay no income tax or duties. In Sierra Leone, the diamond multinational De Beers, as well as American and Canadian mining companies, financed a 10-year civil war that killed 75,000 people. There has been a long-standing alliance between the U.S. and multinational corporations, with Washington overthrowing progressive governments all over the South that challenge the company's control over their country's resources. This has happened in the Congo, Ghana, Somalia, Iran, Guatemala, Chile, and Nicaragua, amongst other states.
Nigeria is Africa's leading oil producer, the eighth largest in the world, and the fifth biggest exporter to the U.S. Nigerian oil is so important to Washington that President Bush has declared it a strategic asset, which means that he has authorized U.S. military intervention to ensure this oil flow in case it is threatened. For this reason, U.S. warships patrol the Gulf of Guinea, from where Nigerian oil is transported. Most of Nigeria's oil wealth is controlled by the multinationals Royal Dutch Shell, based in the Netherlands and Britain, and ExxonMobil and Chevron, both U.S.-based. Shell and ExxonMobil declared record profits for 2006. In Nigeria, the oil company's policies have fueled enormous official corruption that ensures that after they grab the lion's share of the oil wealth, most of the rest is taken by 1% of the population, while 65% of Nigerians live in poverty.
Shell, the biggest oil producer in Nigeria, was partly responsible for the killing of 9 activists, including Ken Sarawiwa, by a military dictatorship in 1995. The activists oppose the company's operations due to the environmental and social devastation they cause. The Niger Delta, where most of the oil is situated, has been ecologically destroyed by Western oil multinationals. The region is the largest producer of greenhouse gases in the world. The people of the Delta remain amongst the poorest in Nigeria, while Shell has extracted more than $30 billion in oil revenue since the 1960s.
The 7 million Delta residents are mostly subsistence farmers and fishermen women whose rivers and fields have been ruined by oil spills that average 300 a year. Many villages in the Delta have no electricity, clean drinking water, and paid employment, and most have no schools, medical clinics, or social services. The murder of Sarawiwa and the refusal of the oil companies and the government to address his concerns has led to the rise of a far more militant indigenous protest movement led by the Movement for the Emancipation of the Niger Delta, or MEND.
Since January 2006, MEND has been engaged in a major insurgency, kidnapping foreign oil workers, blowing up pipelines, and killing Nigerian soldiers. This has dramatically reduced Nigerian oil production by 28% and that of Shell by a crippling 50%. It has also caused world oil prices to rise. MEND opposes the environmental devastation of the Delta caused by oil companies and wants the region's oil money to go to its people. The group is fighting for total control of oil wealth by the people of the Delta and demands reparations from the companies for their pollution. MEND has warned the oil multinationals to, in its words, leave our land while you can or die in it. The group has made clear that its aim is to totally destroy the capacity of the Nigerian government to export oil.
Afyania Lart is president of Women Light Foundation, a non-governmental organization that works in the Niger Delta. She is from Bayelsa State in the Delta and belongs to the Fangbe community. Women Light Foundation is linked to Friends of the Earth International.
They are creating a war within Nigeria, these oil companies, using our own people to kill our own people, whether they are militants or they are military, they are soldier men. We are all Nigerians, and it's a sad thing. And I don't see a reason why Nigerian military that's supposed to be defending our people will go there, get killed by their own people, and the people get killed by them. Because the people have to protect themselves. How long will this continue? I know that there is one group that is meant. Those groups are genuine. They know what they want. They have a plan. They want a government to look into the situation in the Niger Delta. Communities should take charge of their natural resources, be it from any ethnic nationality in Nigeria. Communities should take be in charge of it, whether it's gold, whether it's marble, solid or liquid mineral, communities should be in charge of it.
An expansion of the insurgency could stop all oil production in the Delta.
I pray that it stops oil production. And one, if it stops, I'd be happy because Shell, if I were Shell, I would stop exploring for more oil. Take a stop and try to at least make amends for the mistakes, the errors they've made.
The oil companies are responsible for enormous environmental and social destruction in Nigeria.
Whenever there is rain, the whole rain is black. If you use this normal zinc to roof your house in less than 3 months, it will be leaking because of acid rain. When we harvest food from these lands now and we eat it, the food tastes like gasoline, the fish tastes like gasoline. Almost everybody suffers from asthma in the Delta. My community has the right to breathe good air. My community has the right to have good, pure land which they can farm on. My community has the right to clean water.
Shell does little to remedy the harmful effects of frequent oil spills.
Oruma, it's a community in Bayelsa State. The spill was so bad that it got into their creek, so there was no water, no food, and Shell did not even bring any relief material for them. Children were asking for water. There were a lot of respiratory diseases, and the whole community there smells crude. If you are there for like 10 minutes, you start choking. So I wonder how people there are surviving, you know. Another example I've been to is Goi, where the whole creek is burnt down. You can't even see one single fish. No crab, periwinkles, everything gone. And there's this community I went to Goi last November, also in Ogoni, that you see oil well boiling. And the youth said that they've gone to complain to Shell, that Shell didn't do anything about it. They said they will come. And as soon as I left that place, less than 5 minutes, the oil well blew out into a big fire. Yes, very huge fire. And they said that the oil well has been leaking like that for 2 years.
Oil operations in the Delta have had a particularly negative impact on women.
Coupled with the oil company came in with the sex industry. When they came, they have money, they spend the dollars, and the people are so poor. So the women go into prostitution, you know, especially child prostitutes. And I think this has contributed to the spread of HIV.
The oil multinationals are the richest and most powerful corporations in the world. In league with the US and other Western neo-colonial powers, they dominate the government of Nigeria.
What can the government do? I don't think the government can do anything. Shell is into the politics of Nigeria, you know. We might say we have our independence, but economically, we are still being colonized. Of course, they are multinational companies, and I think they are bigger than my country. So I don't think my president can just wake up one day and ask Shell or any oil company to leave, and it's going to be easy. I know he feels this blow, these pains, but there is nothing. He's a third world president. There is nothing really much he can do for now.
Because Shell is so powerful.
Shell is powerful internationally. I was surprised. I went to Amsterdam and they are doing the same thing they are doing here in their own home country. Then talk less of Nigeria, so far away.
What are they doing there?
There's a community we went to, Panis. The air in that community smells like rotten egg. Take, for instance, Port Arthur in the U.S. They are building big refineries without even looking at the people at the fence line. These are big countries, you know. If they can't control them, is it Nigerian government that can control them? No, I would want to see that if these oil companies stop putting pressures on in my country's politics, you know, intervening in my country's politics. And I would like to see that they stop pointing at my government as being corrupt, my people as being corrupt, and not just my country, in every other country. I would wish that they stop getting into politics in any country.
And how should Africa as a whole deal with these multinational corporations?
Oh, that's a hard question. How should America deal with the multinational corporation like Shell? How should Netherlands deal with their own Royal Dutch Shell company? They control the world. I think that countries like America, Netherlands, Britain, they should do something about it. Because they are still the economic colonial masters.
Them go be friend to journalist, friend to commissioner, friend to permanent secretary, friend to minister, friend to head of state. Then start to steal money, start them corruption, start them inflation, start them oppression, start them confusion, start them oppression, start to steal money, start to steal money like Obasanjo and Abiola.
ITT International TT
International Rook
International TT
International TIF
International TT.
Canadian companies are prominent in Africa, especially in mining. Canada is the world's leading nation in the area of mineral exploration, and 60% of mining multinationals in the world are Canadian. There are more than 170 Canadian mining companies in Africa with 530 properties. Canadian mining companies have become notorious for environmental destruction and human rights violations all over the world. 10 Canadian mining companies with investments in the Congo have been benefiting from its civil war. These include Barrick Gold, Canada's biggest mining company, and Banro Resources. Barrick and Banro have held mining properties in eastern Congo under Rwandan and Ugandan control. Both companies have been accused of funding military operations in exchange for lucrative contracts. In Ghana, more than half of the 200 active mining concessions belong, at least in part, to Canadian companies.
In Kenya, the Canadian mining company Tiumen Resources is in the initial stages of setting up a titanium mine along the country's coast near the town of Kwale, which is 65 kilometers south of the city of Mombasa. Kenya's coast is a beautiful tropical paradise with 250 miles of palm-fringed beaches and blue lagoons. It also has a fragile ecosystem. Titanium is a mineral used in the manufacture of aircraft, cars, and tennis rackets. Tiumen calls Kwale Kenya's biggest mining operation, which is projected to generate over $40 million annually and is worth $922 million. The mine threatens to displace 500 Kwale residents and destroy their community. The residents refuse to leave, and this has stopped the project for the moment. Tiumen's strip mining will also contaminate air and water, remove all vegetation, and spread radiation. Kenyan scientists warn that it will never be safe for people to return to Kwale after it is mined.
Mwana Siti Bijuma lives in Kwale and is a community mobilizer for the group Muslims for Human Rights, or MUHURI, which opposes the project and is organizing against it in collaboration with three other NGOs, non-governmental organizations, Action Aid International, Kenya, the Kenya Land Alliance, and the Coastland Rights Lobby.
People's land will be destroyed. The social cultural places will be destroyed. The king shop will be destroyed because people will go through different places. People worship graves. Or this is the ancestral land where people, fathers and forefathers were buried. Their shrines are there. So people always treasure and worship these places. All this thing will go just because of something called titanium. My family has lived there for generations and generations. My father, my great-grandfather, my great-grandfather, my great-great-grandfather. Those people have lived there since the colonial period. My great-grandfather's grave is there. My great-great-grandfather's grave is there. My grandmother's grave is there. My grandfather's grave is there. And today, someone is telling me to move out of that place just because they think mining is the best. So how do you think I'll feel? Where will I take those graves? My kids, where will they go? Where will they call a place where they used to know? It is really terrible. A place where you have always called a home. Today you can't call a home just because the government and titanium think that they need money.
The people of Kwale are farmers.
People who live there, they depend on agriculture. They dig. The coconut trees that live there, they take the coconut, they sell. That's what they sell. That's what they eat because they dig. Then that's their food. People plant skuma, maize. Maize, then they grind, then they get flour. They plant tomatoes, they plant vegetables, so many crops. There are trees like coconut trees, there are mango trees which they depend on for their daily bread will also be destroyed.
Although Tiumen's preparations for the mine are in the exploration stage, they have already had negative health and environmental effects.
In 1997, they came to our place. They just said they wanted to do a trial so that they can see if the titanium is there. And when they did this trial, there were so many effects in our places. Two kids already have become blind in Kwale, in Samboni district, when they were just doing that trial. And then the water became dry in our place. So we were told that titanium needs a lot of water in order to be manufactured. So these wells have become dry. And then the ones that were left became, there was a cottage of oil on top, but we didn't know what it was. Then a man took that oil and gave his chicken, and 100 chicken died at the same time.
Tiumen and the Kenyan government have failed to consult the Kwale community, especially on the crucial matter of compensation for displacement. The company has offered 80,000 Kenyan shillings per acre, about $1,500, to residents, which they've rejected as inadequate.
It's still the government plus titanium who sat down and thought it is supposed to be 80,000. And they didn't still include the community or the CBOs, community-based organization, or any person from the community they didn't involve. This 80,000, is it for a one family or is it for a polygamous family? Because there are people who have a husband and plus five wives or five children. What about these women whose husband have died? What was that 80,000 for? Was it for that man who has that land, who owns that land, or is it for everyone? That 80,000 is also for buying land.
The Kenyan government will only get a 2.5% mining royalty from Teomen.
Why we refused the second thing was that all this money that they are going to make, billions and billions of money, why can't they give, and what will the community benefit out of that? What will Kenya benefit out of that? Because they said annually, Kenya will get 2.5% annually royalty. What is 2.5%? And yet they're getting billions and billions of money out of that place. Is this company going to bring benefit to Kenya, or is it going to bring crisis to Kenya? Are we trying to improve the poverty ratio, or are we trying to decrease it? Is this Teomen bringing blessings to us, or is it bringing curses? From our seeing, we see that it's bringing curses to us, because people will get blind. Rivers will dry. People will suffer.
Like the people of the Niger Delta, the people of Kwale know that their perilous situation is a result of Western neocolonialism.
We don't trust the government. It can be bribed from colonial period. We have visited the colony. But I think we're still there. Because of late, we are not even free. Because everything we have to do, maybe we have to ask permission from the states. You know, we are not as independent as we think.
Nigeria and Kenya are only two amongst many African countries whose resources are being looted by Western multinational corporations. An important aspect of this thievery is tax looting, which is facilitated by a global infrastructure of corruption set up by Western governments and corporations in collusion with the World Bank and the IMF. This infrastructure includes many tax havens, banks, false transfer pricing by corporations, and the imposition of very low tax rates on African countries.
The result is that Western multinationals pay little tax to African governments and are able to extract a massive amount of capital from the continent. The African Union estimates that $148 billion leaves the continent illicitly every year. This money goes mainly to the US, Britain, and Switzerland. An astounding 30% of sub-Saharan Africa's GDP has been moved offshore. To expose this phenomenal looting, African and Western economists and activists set up the Tax Justice Network at the World Social Forum held in Nairobi, Kenya, in January 2007. Charles Abugre from Ghana spoke for the Tax Justice Network at the forum.
Africa is usually considered as an income-poor country, a capital-poor country. In reality, since 1995, Africa has been a net capital exporter to the developed world, and in massive quantities and values. This capital export is usually very simplistically referred to as monies looted by African governments and African elite to the north. The story is a lot more complex than that. Our estimates is that of all resources that flow out in net terms from Africa, the share of corruption in that outflow is less than 10%. Even the corrupt money do leave Africa because the environment and the mechanisms are in place that attract and suck out the money. Corruption per se is not a good thing, but it will always be reinvested if it doesn't have a haven to go to. Tax havens, banking secrecy is the major mechanism that encourages the sucking out of money from Africa.
John Christensen is an economist and a director of the International Secretariat of the Tax Justice Network. He is a former economic advisor to the government of Jersey, a major tax haven which is part of Britain.
For every dollar of aid that the West gives to Africa, $10 of dirty money flows out from Africa, heading northwards into secret bank accounts and offshore companies. Over the last 50 years, a shadowy economy of tax havens and offshore finance centers has been created. These places are very secretive. At the moment, there are about 72, maybe 75 tax havens around the world. Some of them are very small islands, but some of them are major finance centers like the City of London, like Frankfurt, New York, Luxembourg, and other major centres like that. The vast majority of multinational corporations make extensive use of offshore companies in order to avoid paying tax in the jurisdictions where they make their profits. Chevron, Texaco, Shell, a whole host of extractive industry corporations have been involved in this. Those in the West, particularly the Western governments like the British government, the United States government, the World Bank, who point the fingers at Africans, really should begin by tackling their own poor governance and their own corruption. A starting point is to close off the secrecy space and this corruption interface of tax havens, which enable and facilitate and encourage corruption in Africa.
Many multinational companies combine the use of tax havens with corrupt trade pricing policies that also enable massive tax looting.
And they do this largely through transfer pricing techniques where they export their commodities out of Africa at very low prices and import into Europe and North America at high prices, leaving the profits in offshore jurisdictions where it's tax-free.
For example, there are some studies show that between 1996 and 2005 alone, the loss of money as a result of either low pricing of exports to the United States, only as an example, or high pricing of imports from the United States lost Africa in net terms over $31 billion. If you extrapolate that the United States is only has 40% of the total trade volumes of Africa, then we are talking about a minimum of $75, $80, to $100 billion that flow out in trade misinvoicing. That is transnational companies that are importing and overpricing, exporting and underpricing the exports that they give.
Along with tax havens and false pricing, a third tactic that enables corporate tax looting is the US's use of the World Bank to force African governments to reduce their taxes. This is known as tax competition.
And tax competition that forced African government to reduce taxes almost to zero, basically getting entirely nothing from the natural resources, which is their main source of revenue. And Zambia is a very ridiculous situation. In 2004, Zambia exported what they quote is not really what the real value of exports are. They quoted $1 billion of exports from the copper industry. They paid the Zambian government $8 million of total revenue. But the real value, if you then factor in this mispricing that I talk about, you will be thinking about between $2 to $3 billion. Entire revenue share of the mineral wealth to the Zambian people is $8 million out of a declared $1 billion. Now that is scandalous.
What percentage is that?
Or this is about 0.6%. Now that means that all of the price booms in the commodity sector is not going to benefit Africa at all unless you address transnational companies basically ripping and ripping the continent of resources.
You have been listening to Corporate Plunder, the third episode of the documentary series The Ravaging of Africa.
The Ravaging of Africa is dedicated to the memory of Patrice Lumumba.
This series was written by Asad Ismi and produced by Christian Schwartz. Go to www.asadismi.ws. That's www.asadismi.ws for more information or to download the series.
Translation by Maziar Mahajir at Toronto Conversation Corner and Farid Omar. Voiceover by Benedicta Madawo.
Theme music is Nerbalankina by Captain Yaba from Ghana.
On this episode, you also heard International Thief Thief by Fela Kuti from Nigeria. This series was funded by Canadian Union of Public Employees Local 3903, QP National, Canadian Union of Postal Workers National, CUBW North Bay Local, Canadian Labour Congress, Public Service Alliance of Canada, Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation, Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association, Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, and Mining Watch Canada.
Thank you for listening.